Fine. Before we just get into Ushami, I this morning I just took up the introduction of the L.A. Tamar to the Ushami, now that we've been introduced to the L.A. Tamar. He has a bit of a discussion there of understanding the Bavli and the Ushami, whether you have to understand it. I hadn't seen it before. I wish I had. I'll just share it with you as long as I saw it. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia says that Rabbi Zera, when he left Bavel, fasted 40 fasts to forget everything he learned in Bavel, which is a very odd thing to do. And right, everyone tries to understand what exactly he was doing. Like, is it really that bad? Like, everything you learn in Bavel is that bad? Like, you spend, it's like you did Daf Yomi several times over, you know it really well, and then, oh, but you moved to Eretz Yisrael, so forget it. I want to forget everything. That's a little bit of an odd thing to do. So he argues. Right. So he argues that that's not what's going on. And he notes that the Gemara in Chagiga Daf Yud talks about it being darkness to go from whatever different shito there, but Rabbi Yochanan says that it's even sincere to be going into darkness if you switch from learning one Talmud to the other. So the way that Rav Tamar takes both of these together is he says as follows: the Bavli and the Yerushalmi should be understood differently. But as we know, as we've seen in many of our Mefarshim, it is very hard for someone who knows the Bavli really well, especially, to read the Yerushalmi not in light of the Bavli. And therefore, what he says, the reason that you're in darkness when you switch from one Talmud to the other is because it's very hard to read a Gemara on a sugya that you've already learned when you're from an objective standpoint, if you've already learned the sugya in the opposite one. And therefore, it's just very hard. And he argues that, what was I just finished the thought. He argues that's what's going on with Rabbi Zera. That it's not that Rabbi Zera wanted to forget the Bavli. Is that Rabbi Zera, who had grown up in the Bavli, was a huge Talmud Chacham and knew the Bavli really well, was now worried. He wanted to learn Talmud Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to learn, but he wanted to be able to learn it with objectivity on its own terms. And he fasted to not be influenced by the Bavli in his learning of Yerushalmi. But Toch Kedei, what you see is that Rav Tamar is, not surprisingly for someone who wrote a commentary on the Yerushalmi, even though it's not true of all the commentaries on the Yerushalmi, felt that the Bavli and the Yerushalmi really do have their own things to say, and that's why it is particularly important, even if it's really hard, to understand them on their own terms. Yes, Kobi. Correct, right? You can always say, well, look, this discussion seems to appear in some version in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, and take that as a data point. Right, as we saw that, right, exactly, the real right, but on the other hand, to be completely influenced is problematic. Okay, fine. That was on that. So now let's turn back to the Yerushalmi. So let's do a 10-minute recap of everything we've done. Bavli, Yerushalmi, right? 10 minutes. Okay, let's try to get it done and then finish the Yerushalmi. Okay, so if you remember. In the Bavli, we have a machloket. Rabbi Kiva thinks that Zevet Shvi it is? Doraita. Rabbi Ishmael thinks that it is? Halach Moshe Mimi Sinai. Now, why, according to the Yerushalmi, nowadays does it not apply? Right, the Gemara goes to three different answers. What's the Gemara's final conclusion? Why is that we paskin like Rabbi Ishmael, and the Halach Moshe Mimi Sinai is? That it only applies in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Right, and we said that's not exactly, it's not exactly clear why that would be true. It's not clear there's a great answer to this question. I have never seen a great answer to this question of why it should be contingent on it. I asked one of my neighbors who I've mentioned before, who's been writing a smicha curriculum on Shemitah for the year. So I asked him if he had seen anything. He also hadn't seen anything. He sent me his own article on it, and he said, this is what I wrote up, though I'm really not sure it's good. Right? Because it's not super compelling. I mean, I'll tell you what he argues, but his name is Rabbi Bitzal Daniel. And he argues that maybe it has something to do with the fact that Shemitah, as we've seen, at least according to some of the Mefarshim, is about relying on God, is about teaching us to rely on God. And the Beit HaMikdash is also right, that's central to the experience of the Beit HaMikdash, whereas we are cognizant of God's hashgacha, and therefore maybe conceptually the ideas and the beliefs that the Mikdash is trying to imbibe, maybe help us imbibe and whatever feel, is similar to Shemitah, and there, right, and that idea of relying on God. But maybe when there is no Beit HaMikdash, that doesn't apply. But again, when I sent it to him, he said, "I wrote about it, but I don't think my argument is so convincing." Yeah. That's a direct quote. So, yeah, I mean, again, there isn't a great answer. You could just say it's part of the halacha mishmisinai. What can you do? In terms of the conceptual, what? Just like in the Chamayim, right? So. I mean, maybe it is, right? Because rain is the classic thing we talk about relying on God. Again, it's not great. What can you do? Okay, but we noted that within the conceptual models as well, we went through two conceptual models, which were either Tosefet Shviit is adding to the Kedusha itself, or it's usher to prepare for Shemitah. We noted that there's a possible distinction between before and after, which is why, right, going to the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, there may be a difference between Tosefet Shabbat before and after, Tosefet Shviit before and after. We noted that at least the Gemara in Moed Katan, definitely in the formulation of Rabbi Akiva, which of the two types of Tosefet Shviit seems more likely? Preparation, right? Shishit, right? Nichnas l'Shviit, Shishit HaYotzei, right? Where that's the language, and this is indeed Rav Moshe's argument, where Rabbi Ishmael might be about Tosefet Kedusha. We noted that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, this is less clear, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah seems to be primarily about Tosefet Kedusha because it compares it to Shabbat and Yom Tov and Yom HaKippurim, where there is no issue of Hachana. We noted that some stages in the Gemara that seem to toy with this, the question of Malkut, if you remember, was one place, right, where if it's actually extending the year, it makes sense that you might get Malkut for violating Tosefet Shviit. If it's just Hachana, so maybe that's why you would not. We noted that potentially this might explain whether all prohibitions extend to Tosefet Shviit or only some, like Choresh, right? Where if you think that it's about preparations, only certain malachot will be extended. But if not, or if it's about adding to the Kedusha, all of them should, which creates problems because, as we know from the second perek of Shviit, are all the prohibitions extended into Tosefet Shviit? No. Right? So there we saw Rav Moshe Feinstein's argument that even if you think it extends to Shemitah, this was the time travel argument, right? Was that really even the malachot during Shemitah that are forbidden are only those which benefit year 7. And therefore, in theory, if you could have a malacha during year 7, which would not benefit year 7, ichshu, would benefit year 6. Right? Would benefit year 6, it would be permitted, right? Which is obviously not possible, but by that logic, he says, but in year 6, where it actually is year 6, even if you hold Tosefet Shviit, means you're adding Kedusha, since it's right, certain malachot are only benefiting the here and now, they are going to be permitted, even if you've extended Shemitah, right? That was Rav Moshe's time travel argument. Great. We noted that within these models, it's always possible to distinguish between the D'oraita and the D'rabbanan, the Halacha Moshe Misinai and the D'rabbanan, which at least in the Bavli, though this is not clear in the Yerushalmi, right, in the Bavli, there's a very clear distinction for Rabbi Ishmael between the 30 days, right, which he thinks are Halacha Moshe Misinai, and the extension back towards Pesach Shavuot time, which he agrees is D'Rabbanan, right? If it hasn't become clear, the simple pshat in the Yerushalmi, and I don't know how much you've been using the Art Scroll, but they make a point of this in several of their footnotes. In the Yerushalmi, this does not seem to be the case. Right, the Gemara never makes a distinction according to anybody, right? Tosefet Shviit seems to be, right, according to Rabbi Akiva, Tosefet Shviit, the D'oraita goes all the way back to the Shnei Prakim. And if it doesn't apply, in the Shnei Prakim, and if it doesn't apply, then there's nothing all the way until Rosh Hashanah. There doesn't seem to be, right? The Yerushalmi, unlike the Bavli, doesn't seem to believe in this. But in the Bavli, theoretically, you could say that the 30-day extension is the Tosefet Kedusha, and the D'Rabbanan, according to Rabbi Ishmael, is an Isra Hachana, right? But again, in the Yerushalmi, we don't see this. Okay, right? That's just some of the conceptual issues we saw in the Bavli. Obviously, we spent a lot more time on it. But those were some of the issues, right? Again, the Gemara here, we have the two models. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah seems to be focusing a lot more on the model of Tosefta Kedusha. We noted that both in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi at some point it says, well, maybe you should learn there's no Tosefet Shviit from comparing it to Shabbat where there's no Tosefet Shabbat, which is obviously a problem because there is Tosefet Shabbat. So either you say Tosefet Shabbat is Derabanan, according to some Rishonim, or, right, Mordechai's model, which is Tosefet Shviit is about adding Kedusha or preparing, but Tosefet Shabbat is about showing excitement, which is a different conceptual model, or, according to the Rush, Tosefet Shabbat is about making sure you don't accidentally violate Shabbat, but it's not a real addition. Tosefet Shviit is. Or Tosefet Shabbat is about adding Kedusha. Tosefet Shviit about Hachana. So they're different conceptual models. Fine. We move to the Yerushalmi. In the Yerushalmi, we open with Psukim, which may or may not be the same as Rabbi Akiva. However, people like the Pnei Moshe think that if it's quoting Psukim, they change the Girsa to be the Psukim that we find in the Bavli, and therefore think that the Yerushalmi opens Rabbi Akiva's position. Until what point does he think it transitions? When the Gemara says, right? We voted out of existence. How can you do that? Gadol mimenu v'chachma uv'minyan. So at that point, he thinks it transitions to be Derabanan. However, we noted that you could get out of this and say, first of all, if you're not influenced by the Bavli, so you have no reason to believe this. Right, especially since it quotes different psukim in our girsa than the Bavli. And therefore, you can argue this is a third position. Furthermore, if you think that the limitations of Gadol Menu Chachmu V'Minyan apply even by all or some de'oraita, as we saw in the Melechet Shlomo and Rav Kook, again, Rav Kook thinking that Gadol Menu Chachmu V'Minyan is needed to overturn a de'oraita that was unanimous, Melechet Shlomo doesn't even seem to have that limitation, so then it could be that it's de'oraita throughout.
Or you could say that it's not.
Or alternatively, right, and this is the first shita in who? In Rav Chaim Kanievsky, that it's all de'oraita. If it's all de'oraita, so it could be that when the Gemara says, how can you get out of it, you need chachma v'minyan, that was in the Rambam-esque model where Gadol Menu chachma v'minyan is only a problem for Dirabanan. But l'maskana, right, once you say it's de'oraita, right, this is not a problem, that's you solve the chachma v'minyan issue. The other possibility he had was that it's all Derabanan, which is something we don't find in the Bavli, that everything, even the Psukim, are Asmachtot. The problem here is we can't necessarily solve the Gadol Menu Chachma V'Minyan issue. Where we'd left off, therefore, was with the Alei Tamar, who said maybe it's not Doraita and it's not Derabanan, and it's not Halachah Lomar Shmei Sinai, it's Asmachta, where Asmachta, it really is Derabanan. So why does it matter that you have an Asmachta on one? Because Asmachta is where God says, here is my strong advice, you don't have to take it if you don't want to, and therefore it's somewhere between Daraita and Darabanan, but why might that get rid of the problem of Chachma V'Minyan? Because in this particular case, you have a smachta in both directions, and therefore it's as if God himself is sanctioning your choice to have Tosefet Shviit and your choice to not have Tosefet Shviit, because God himself apparently thought that in different times and places, it would be good to have Tosefet or not good to have Tosefet, and therefore, right, maybe that solves the problem. Okay, right, those were, again, that's not a full chazar of everything that we've seen, but it touches on a lot of the central issues that we have seen, though, as you know, considering this is Shir 10 on this topic, we have fleshed each of those out in great detail, okay? If you want to look at if you want to spend some time and look through the footnotes, again, the Hebrew footnotes are a little bit different than English footnotes. They will go through the issue of whether you can read into the Yerushalmi the distinction between 30 days and more. Because again, the simple pshat in the Yerushalmi is either you hold up Tosefet Shviit, all of it, or you don't. But not that there's a difference, that some of it is Daraita and some of it is Halacha Moshe Mishnah, some is Derabanan. But in the footnotes, they do go through the possibility, right, of maybe you can find a way that this is okay, if you want to. So that brings us to the end of the Halacha, right? The last thing we'd left off, for those in the Art Scroll or the Ozvah Hadar in general, the top of Bet Amud Aleph, okay? So, before we finish the Yerushalmi, I wanted to make one important point in the Marafulda. And that is as follows, okay? So, make sure everyone has the Ozva Hadar. So the first Marafulda on the top of Ben Amud Aleph in the Ozva Hadar, okay? So, remember, we have a drasha of some sort, or an asmachta of some sort, or something, right, that compares Shabbat to Shemitah. The Marafulda has a very nuanced discussion about what type of drasha it is. So, Kobe, since you came over to me, so tell me, what are the two deot in the Marafulda? And just so you know, that in the Bavli, you get the same thing in Tosfot and Rabbeinu Chananel, you get similar discussions. What is the nature of the drasha, right? We have a pasuk about Shabbat and a pasuk about Shemitah, and we somehow compare them in the final assessment to believe that there is no such thing as Tosefet Shvi'it. What is the nature of that drasha? Right, so first of all, he says, "Hachi garstinan sheishim im taasem maasecha v'yom hashvi tishbot b'charesh v'katzir tishbot." The first one he says is, "Hikisha katuv tishbot yom hashvi v'tishbot de b'charesh v'katzir shein mayri b'shvid v'aval gav de kvarkdish sheishanim hikishan lehetir lomar lacha mashavat breshit." The first possibility is that what is the nature of the drasha? A hekesh. Right, what's a hekesh? Right, where you compare two halachic categories, right? Lishna achrina. What's his second one? Kra daserda dibrodu, kumosha katuv besvarim. He changes the girsa. Again, we have many girsa problems here. Vialfinan shvid mishabat. And we learn it out not from a hekish, or as we have it maybe in Rabbeinu Chanan, al-gzera shava. Right? So in Rabbeinu Chanan, it seems to be an actual gzera shava, not just a hekish, right? If you look here in footnote one, right? Right? Rabbeinu Chanan seems to think that it's a gzera shava from the word Shabbat. But in the second one, it's either a mematzinu or a binyanav. What's a mematzinu or a binyanav? Right, different types of drasha. But what do they do? Right, exactly. Mematzinu is, well, we find it here, so it probably applies there also, right? And that's his second one. Lashon achina krad asar dibrodu ukamosh kadav mitzvarim v'alfian shvim shabbat breishit utam echad lohem. And he says, how could you have a binyanav or a mematzinu where we just say, well, if it's true in X, it's true in Y? How could you do something like that? What's his answer? Da tam echad lahem. What's tam echad lahem? They have the same rationale. The sheshit shanim keneged sheshat yamim. Sheshit yamim ushana shvit neged Shabbat, because the 6 days are parallel to 6 years and Shabbat is parallel to Shemitah. So now I ask you, what is the difference between saying that the comparisons between Shabbat and Shemitah are derived from either a hekish or a gzera shaveh versus a mematzin or binyanav on the other hand? What's the difference? One has to have misorah versus one. So a gzera shaveh, if you think, needs a misorah, good. But now let's get into this. Why does that matter? So what? So it needs a misorah. You're right. So you can't just make up a mematzinu. But what's the difference between saying it's a gzera shaveh or a hekish for that matter and saying it's a mematzin or a binyanav? You already said that.
No,
there's nothing more important. Come on. Why is it that Yegzer Shavah needs halacha Moshe Mishinai? Why is a hekesh so limited? And therefore, right, because, first of all, you're making comparison between words, and because, is it a logical drasha?
No.
Not always. Right, Yegzer Shavah isn't always a logical drasha. It's not always a logical drasha. It's not driven by logic. What is it driven by? Similar words, and therefore you need a mesorah. So if you say it's a gzera shava, or even a hekesh, where you compare the areas, what is the implication of that type of limud? What does it tell you about the connection between Shabbat and Shemitah?
That they're not actually similar.
Let's try that again.
They're not actually...
Try that one more time. You're close. They're not actually the same. They might be similar, but they're not the same. Right? Meaning if you say, listen, Shabbat and Shemitah are comparable to each other, but only through a very formal gzera, maybe even a gzera shava, which you need halacha moshe mishinai, which is what seems to emerge from Rabbeinu Chananel, right? That it's Shabbat. Then what does that tell you? They might be similar, they might not, but they're definitely not identical.
No, but
And therefore, in order to compare them, what do you need? You need formality, right? You need to, like, know the rules of drasha such that you can figure out how you compare one to the other, because they might share certain similarities, but it's not like you look at Shemitah and your first thing that you say is, aha, everything that's true in Shemitah is true in Shabbat.
The basis that they're comparing them off is like their own like prohibitions.
And therefore?
It's different than the second model, which is like comparing their essence. Kind of.
Very good, exactly. Very good. And even if you think that it's a Hekish or a Gzeirah Shavah and it does imply a similarity, I think Kobe's formulation is very good. What does that imply? That Shabbat and Shemitah share certain details. They both have certain malachot that are prohibited. There are obviously things that are similar. And therefore, we can compare the malacha here, the malacha there, certain details of them. But still, even if certain details are shared and they are similar, still, are they identical? No. And therefore, what's the only way that you compare Shabbat and Shemitah? With a formal drasha of some sort, because formal drasha would allow us to borrow details from areas of halacha that maybe are related, maybe are not, maybe are somewhat related, and carry them over. Right? As you know from learning Gemara, sometimes Gzeirah Shavah is between related issues, and sometimes I find a word here, I find a word there. These two areas are completely different, but I have a Masorah from Moshe Rabbeinu that this is supposed to teach me something. Right? Yalla. And therefore, the first formulation of the Marafolda, what did he tell you about the way he views the connection between Shabbat and Shemitah? They're either unrelated or they're related, but not like, they're not essentially the same. And therefore, the only way to compare Shabbat and Shemitah is a Hekish, Gzeirah Shavah, is a formal hermeneutic method that allows me to borrow and carry over from one area of halacha to another. Right? But his second formulation, which is a Mematzinu, right? What does he tell you? His second one is, no, this is not a Gzeirah Shavah. It's not borrowing from the word Shabbat. It's not a Hekish. It's a Mematzinu. It's, we carry over from Shabbat to Shemitah. From Shemitah to Shabbat, no problem. Why not? He tells you. Good. Kobe's formulation is very good. What is the ability to derive halacha from Mematzinu tell you about the two areas of halacha in question? I liked Kobe's formulation. It was even sharper. That they share an essence, right? That's what he says. Tam echad lahem. It's not just that they're the same, meaning they're not actually the same, but they share an essence. They share an essential core, right? And that, I think, is what it's explicitly what the Marafolda says. Right? He says there's two ways of learning all these drashot between Shabbat and Shemitah. One is that this is a series of hekeshim, gzirot, shavot, and the like, meaning Shabbat and Shemitah share certain similarities, but they're not the same. And therefore, every time you want to borrow a detail from one to the other, you need to come up with a drasha. But his second formulation, Lishna Achrina, is, no, Tam Echad Lahem. You know why I can derive from Shabbat to Shemitah? I don't need any formality. It's a Mematzinu. A Mematzinu, what does Mematzinu literally mean? Just like we find here, we find it there. Mamatzinu po, right? Just like we found here, we borrow it there. Right? Because tam echad lahem, because Shabbat and Shemitah at their core are the same thing.
But either they are or they aren't. You can't say, that's not true. I don't think they have the same essence. Either they do or they don't.
No, that's exactly his point. Is that his first possibility is that they may share certain similarities, but they're not essentially the same. And therefore, if you want to borrow from one to the other, you need to justify it.
They are essentially the same.
Correct.
So either they are or they aren't. You can't say
that's Lishna Achrina. Lishna Achrina means a second possibility. That's exactly the point. Marafolda is telling you, I have two ways of reading this Gemara. The first way is that...
What would be their showing you that they aren't essentially the same?
What do you mean? According to the first shot, he thinks that they're...
Once you have the 6 and 1, 6 and 1.
Correct, but that... Exactly. Right? According to the first sheet, yeah, they both have 6 and 1. Yeah, both are called Shabbat. But you know what? Okay. Meaning they are times of rest and they follow 6 and 1. There are a lot of things that are 6 and 1 in Torah, but maybe that's not all of them are essentially the same. I mean, look, 6 and 1 is a pattern that we find in Torah, and maybe it's, It's whatever. It's a nice pattern. I don't know, right? Or, you know, once the world was created in a 6-in-1 thing, I feel like, you know, we like 6-in-1s. I don't know, right? It's like, look, it's like me telling you, well, I don't understand. Your fingers are divided into, you have 10 fingers, right? And there are also 10 digits. I mean, doesn't that show you that, like, there's a fundamental connection between your 10 fingers and base 10 mathematics?
Yes.
I mean, yes, in that case. But, right? Except there were people who counted in base. Yes, exactly. In Tanakh, we count in base 60.
What?
You never knew that? Have you ever followed that? 600,000, 60, right? 60s, right? The units in Tanakh are not base 10 units, right? That wasn't the way they were counting. In many different cultures, you had all types of things, right?
So, well, that's why when they say 60,000, it's like, it's a rounded number.
Yes, 60 was a unit, exactly. And 300, right? You know, and right? Yes, 60. They have weird units, right? Their units are 60 or 400, right? Those are like units in the ancient world. What? Correct. But it's like, but 10 is a nice unit, right? Divisible, right? When you divide it by 2, it's 5 and 5. But like, nice the Aseret HaDibrot are not like, right? If someone said, obviously your right hand is connected to the first 5 of the Dibrot and your left hand is the, right? The other, I mean, 10 is a number. It's nice. It's divisible by 5. You divide it into 2 units. I mean, it's great, right? But like, that doesn't mean that like my pinky is an Ochi Hashem Elokecha. And I mean, like, there's like, you know, you can, I don't know. I'm sure someone does say it. I, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, everyone, at some point, you know, you'll say something as a joke and then you'll find that someone actually said, aha, you know, if you put your hands like this, yeah, it could be. I have no idea. My point is that you're right. It's hard to say they're not connected at all. But on the other hand, that doesn't mean they're identical. It doesn't mean they're the same, right? Remember, in the end of the day, right, it's not obvious that they're the same, right? Shabbat, we know what it commemorates. It commemorates the creation of the world, right? And it commemorates Mitzrayim, right? Those are the two Aseret HaDibrot. We saw a million different reasons for Shemitah. Some people thought Pitachon, the creation of the world, and things like that, right? But some people said it's about equality. It's about helping the poor. It's about, right, holding in your lust for materialism, right? Which is not necessarily what Shabbat is about. Again, the reason I point this out is, look, we could give a whole shiur on this question. Maybe we will at some point in the year as we build more data on Shemitah. But the point that we should walk away with, at least for now, is that what the Marafolda tells us, which I think is important, is that in the end of the day, yes, consistently we have conversation. We put Shabbat and Shemitah in conversation. But why is that, right? Is it because maybe they share some similarities and therefore you combine the fact they have certain similarities with Gzeirah Shoveh and Hekesh and formal drushot and the like. So then, okay, fine. You can borrow certain halachot. In which case, listen, I'm not saying that they're completely different. You don't have to say they're completely different. But what would you be able to say at that point? But they're not the same either. Right, that's why I need a formal drasha. Or the second shot in the Marafolda, which Kobe puts very nicely, is no. The reason that you see these comparisons is because Tameh Chodlahem. Right? These patterns aren't just patterns that happen to overlap. They tell you that Shabbat and Shemitah are basically the same thing, one through the lens of weeks, and one through the days and weeks, the other through the lens of years. And they are the same. Now, obviously the problem is they're not the same. Right, so you'd have to say they fulfill the same purpose, and therefore, in anything that makes sense, you can borrow from one to the other, right? Obviously, there are limitations on this.
Between the two opinions?
In our Gemara, no, but that's why I'm saying maybe later in the year, as we get more data conceptually, right, we'll see, right, which one, right, is more compelling, right? I mean, the more we learn about Shemitah, then we'll have to see, what do you think, right? In the end of the day, when you go through the halachot, do we think that Limaskana, it makes more sense to say Shemitah and Shabbat are basically the same thing, right? Or no, they share certain similarities maybe, but they're not the same, right? Which one? But here you have the Marafolda putting out quite an audacious thesis to explain it, which definitely should have implications on other sugyot. But obviously, you know, today we're going to finish the first halacha in the Yerushalmi, So I don't think now is the time to really weigh in whether, right, how far we should extend this. Yeah.
If it's a Gezer Shava, then that means that they had it the entire time. And the context of the Gemara is this is when they made a butter. So how can that Gezer Shava have existed the entire time? And this is once they made that, this is when they're getting rid of Sefer Shvi'is.
Yeah, so it happens to be that if I remember correctly, it was in one of the footnotes here. If not, I saw it elsewhere, but it could be somewhere in the footnotes. But I think so, but I have to look for it. That it's not clear that the Yerushalmi agrees with the Bavli's limitation on Gzeres Shava.
Really?
It's not clear that the Yerushalmi thinks that Gzeres Shava has to be passed down by Yerubim in the same way that the Bavli does.
So they think that you can just plan out of Gzeres Shava.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. Yerushalmi never puts that explicit limitation on it. No one compiles them. It's just that the Gemara, the Bavli has a rule that you can't say.
That doesn't seem formal anymore.
Correct. And it could be that they have different understandings. Correct. Correct. And maybe the Bavli and Yerushalmi have different understanding how some of these mechanisms work. Correct. Good. Okay, fine. Now, let us try to polish off the first halacha and move on. Okay, so we were up to V'lama ad ha'atzeret. So imgvar, why until Shavuot? Which again, in the Bavli is clearly derabanan, but as we've mentioned in the Yerushalmi, it is not clear that this is meant as a derabanan. Because ad kan hu yafel lipri mikan va'elach humin nabel perotav. So what does he say? Why is Tosevet Shvi'it until Shemitah? Oh, sorry, until Shemitah, until Shavuot, because until Shavuot, the work you do is benefiting the fruit, and the fruit are defined as perot shishit. And from now on, it's minabel perotav. It makes it worse. Now, obviously, again, we're not going to get into this too much, but you tell me, what is the problem? What conceptual problem are you forced to ask when you read these lines? Right, this is something methodologically I want you to think about every time. Okay, let me put it very simply. Okay, what options are there when you're working a tree? What impact might it have on the tree? There are three impacts it could have.
It might have good impact, bad impact, or no impact.
Good, exactly. And what does the Gemara do here? It says until Atzeret, it's good for the fruit, for shishit. Right? If I stop there, this is classic Bavli. What would the implication be? That what defines something as being asur for Tosevet Shvi'it? If it's no longer good for the sixth year. But what would you say about neutral?
There's no thing as a neutral.
That's not true.
When you water a tree, it's either helping the fruit or it's making it worse. It's not doing nothing.
I don't know.
You can't say it's doing nothing.
I don't know.
Maybe it's intentional.
Yeah, or it's insignificant, right? And therefore legally neutral, right? Well, I don't know, right? This is exactly the question I want to ask you, right? Which is, or I'll put it differently. If I ask you the question, what makes something not Asur Mishum Tosevet Shvi'it? Is it because what? Is it that in order to make it mutter, it needs to be actively good for last year's produce? But if it's neutral, then what happens? Then halachically we have to treat it as shvi'it. Or is it the opposite? Right? That neutral is de facto is mutter, right? And it's only if it's, right, bad, right, would you say that proves it's not Shemitah, right? Meaning, it doesn't tell you. What it tells you is that if it's actively good for year six, then it's not Asur Mishum Tosevet Shvi'it. And if it's actively bad for year, right, bad, then that proves that it's, right, sorry, if it's actively bad for last year's produce, so then the only reason you would do it is because you're doing it for Shemitah. But what if you had a situation where it's, not clear. We don't know.
Why would anyone ever plow if it was only bad for their fruit?
So that's what the Gemara is saying. That if it's bad for the fruit, then the only reason you would do it, the Gemara assumes, is because it's good for the tree in the long term, which means you're preparing for year seven, right? No, meaning, no. Meaning it's bad for the fruit and therefore good, but you're doing it because it's good for the tree. But what's left, right? But therefore, what would happen if, right? So, but what the question you have to ask is, why is it mutter? Right? Clearly, if I'm doing something which is bad for the tree, for the fruit, and the only reason I'm doing it is to prepare for the seventh year, that's usur. I'm preparing for Shemitah. And if I'm doing it because it's actively positive for last year's fruit, so it's clearly shishit. But what happens if it's not bad for this year's fruit? Right? So then what do you do? Do I have to err on the assumption, right? Or it's questionable, right? Meaning, let's say questionable. Fine, not neutral. It's questionable, right? So then what do you say? Do you say, I need to, what is the Gemara's conclusion? I need to prove I'm doing it for shishit in order to be mutter, right? But the de facto is that it's usur, or, no, de facto it's mutter, but if I make it clear that I'm doing something that's damaging to the fruit, so then I must be doing it for shemitah, meaning, in a case where it's questionable, do I assume that it's lishishit or shvit? What does the Gemara say? We don't know, because the Gemara gives you two extremes.
But this isn't based on saying that it doesn't matter when it actually switches. So
Okay. But I'm just saying, at this line in the Gemara,
it doesn't sound like it matters if there's a neutral, because sometimes it's going to be passed on. It's going to be before when it.
But that I'm just saying in the Gemara's language, right? It's not clear. It's not clear what the answer is, right?
But it doesn't sound like it matters. We're in Shishit, it doesn't matter when it's good for the fruit or bad for the fruit.
Okay. What do you mean?
Shavuot is the deadline, it doesn't matter.
No, but it's asking why, again, it's, remember. No, that's Beit Shammai, that's Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel says, Kol Yizman Shuyah for the Pri. Remember we said they're close to each other? That why would you pick Shemitah, right? No, other way around. Right, you're right. But again, right, remember, they're close, and we don't know whether they're close conceptually or they're close in time.
Because why did you say Shavuot?
Right, meaning you're saying, why Shavuot? Correct, but what's the principle? Right, what's the principle? That's what I'm saying. What's the principle here? What, right, you still don't know what the principle is here, right? Now, it happens to be that you can make this even more complicated.
Yes.
Look at footnote 5. Right? Look at footnote 5. And he notes that if you look in the Rishonim, and if you you can open it up and look at the back, you could also, you don't have that in the English one, so you do that, but I can look at the Rishonim because the Hebrew one actually has the Rishonim. There's another possibility that the Rishonim don't even read this as long as it's good for the fruit or not good for the fruit. What do they think it is? What? No, look what it is. Look at... Oh, you have something different, apparently. Oh, right, the Hebrew and the English are not the same. In the Rishonim, it sounds like the Isser isn't... When is it actually good for the fruit, and when is it not? But when is it? Nir'eh. Right? When does it seem like it's good for the fruit and bad for the fruit? Meaning, now that makes more sense on the level of what? If you paskin like the Bavli, that what? According to the Yerushalmi, it might be that all the way until Shavuot, let's say, is Asur Mita Oraita. But in the Bavli, it's clear that there's a Doraita core, Alacha Moshe Misinai core, and then there's the rabbinic extension. Right? Within the rabbinic extension, you might say, why Shavuot? Because it doesn't really matter about when it's actually good for the produce or not. We pick an arbitrary date, because since most things, until work done until Shavuot are for year 6, and afterwards are for year 7, it seems, right? Before Shavuot, it seems like it's from last year, and after Shavuot, it seems like it's for next year. But Midoraita doesn't matter, because the prohibition doesn't take effect, or Halacha Moshe Misinai, the prohibition doesn't take effect until 30 days before, right? So the Rishonim, who are influenced by the Bavli, and are reading within the Bavli, think that the issue here is Nireh. When does it seem like people are doing it for year 6 and year 7, which makes sense in the level of the Rabbanan, where the real prohibition doesn't take effect until 30 days before, whatever. Within the Yerushalmi, it doesn't sound that way. It's not about Nira, right? It seems to be. It's really about, it's an actual agricultural reality, right? And then you just got to figure out, well, why would you pick an arbitrary date rather than giving the Mitziut claim, which is, well, as long as it's good. But once you're doing that, so then you got to figure out, okay, but again, what is the emphasis? Is it as long as it's good for your six, or, right, again, that suffix, neutral, questionable thing, is it that unless I can prove it's for your six, it's asur, or it's mutter until proven otherwise? So once I start damaging the fruit, then it's clear that it's because I'm preparing the field.
Can we figure this out based on what Beis Shammai says? That Beis Shammai says it's as long as it's good for the fruit, not talking about when it gets bad, and they have to be disagreeing. So therefore,
I mean, you could try to prove it from that language and say the fact that in the Mishnah the language is Kozman Shehu Yafe Lipri. No, I was right the first time.
Beis Shammai.
They're right. So you could say, oh, Beit Shammai says Yofel Lepre, meaning
that neutral,
right. You could say that according to Beit Shammai, neutral is?
It's not good. You can't.
Is usher, right? The only way to make it mutter is to prove you're doing it for Shishit, and maybe Beit Hillel doesn't agree, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe, remember, this comes back to what question? When the Mishnah says Krovim Divrei Elu Yoke Divrei Elu, does that mean they're fundamentally saying the same thing conceptually, mm-hmm. just a quantitative difference? Or, no, these are fundamentally different, right, conceptually, and maybe, as Josh suggests, the difference is one of them thinks you need to prove, right? Beit Shammai thinks you need to prove that it's from last year, and Beit Hillel thinks you don't need to prove it, right? We pick an arbitrary time because I don't need to prove that I'm doing it for a Shishit. I just need it to not seem actively like it's for Shvid or something like that. It's possible. It's definitely possible. Yeah. Because you can't always, right? And if you look at the Mefarshim here, it's very clear that they think that the whole issue is muchicha milta, is at what point is it clear that you're doing it for this or doing it for that, right? That's like the Marfulda says
only,
that.
You can only prove, it's almost more of a personal thing.
Well, that was exactly, no, that's the Machloka Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, right?
Yeah,
do you pick an arbitrary time or do you?
We're giving a Beit Shammai answer to Beit Hillel.
Yes. Okay, but those are, right. I just think right. you. I don't think there's a great answer, but I want you to notice that in the Gemara.
When you're proving a proof, you can either show it's ripe yet or it isn't ripe. If you're saying it isn't ripe yet, then that means it's doing something.
You can't necessarily prove that you're now making it too ripe.
Well, I mean,
or maybe you can. I'm not a farmer. Okay, maybe you can. But I tend to think that there must be a middle ground where things aren't 100% clear, and it depends on your intent.
I mean, if you see the proof, can you see the thinner, not fine?
I don't know. Look, you'll see later on in the year that there are cases even in Shemitah where it comes down to your dot. So it does, right? There are sugyot in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi where it comes down to your dot, right? So for example, I'm cutting down wood. Am I doing it so that the tree grows better or am I doing it for firewood, right? And the Gemara, the Bavli's language is Halev Yodea Imla Akel Imla Kalkalot, meaning, right? Your heart knows what you're really doing. And yes, of course, the Rishonim say, well, they argue. What does it mean? What is the relevant intent? What about Psik Resha? Okay, fine. Yuj Machloket Rishonim and Achronim. But intent does matter. How much? We'll see. Okay, at any rate, the Gemara says, this is wrong. This can't be. Why? Because Havataninan Echad Ilan Srak VeEchad Ilan Machal. The Isurim of Shemitah and Tosevich V don't only apply to fruit trees. They even apply to non-fruit trees. Ilan Esrak. And if the only standard to figure this out is fruit, well, that doesn't work. Why? Because there are not fruit trees that are also included in the prohibitions of Shemitah and Tosevet Shvi'it. So what does the Gemara answer? So Ad Kan, until Shemitah, hum me'abe'et ha'koret, mikan v'alech hum matish et kocha, until Shavuot, when you work the field, it strengthens the trunk, which, for a tree that doesn't have fruit, the trunk is essentially the equivalent of the fruit. But after that, if you work it too much, what does it do? It weakens the trunk. And therefore, the only reason you would do it is to prepare the ground for next year. And then we have the same problem. What about a neutral case? Exact same problem that we had before.
So maybe if you did it, when it says different elu, what it means is that the one is saying the model of regarding the fruit, another one is saying regarding the trees. And that's where they're similar.
What, say again?
That the Divrei
Elu. Oh, and maybe, if you wanted to. So then the Gemara says, wait a second, V'yachrosh, if by working the tree you are harming it, that can't possibly be considered working the field for its good. Right? And then the Gemara clarifies, no. Since you know later in the year that by continuing to work you are weakening the tree, so then why would you be doing it? For the land, and that's the problem. Af hu eno mitkaven elo avodat haaretz. At that point it becomes clear that what you're doing is working the land, and that obviously is what is asur. Again, the ambiguous middle cases are not completely solved at this point, but again, I want you to at least have noted that that problem exists. Okay? The last phrase in the Gemara, ukrovim divrei elu, so remember, remind me, what did we say you have to ask on the phrase of krovim divrei elu, lioka divrei elu? Why is the Gemara bothering to tell us that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are close? We had two possibilities. We just talked about Josh. Either it's just telling you a practical point, like they happen to be close. That's it. Or it's telling you conceptually they're similar, right? Meaning they fundamentally have a similar conceptual model, but quantitatively they disagree, right? But as you were saying before, maybe they come out the same, but they're different, right? We had suggested maybe one is on the Hachana, Kolzman Shiyafu Lepri, the other is on Tosevitz Man. That's where you pick an arbitrary date, but you've just suggested another model. Maybe the difference is, do you have to prove, Beit Shammai, that it's good for year six? Or, in order for it to be Aser, it needs to be clear that it's for year seven, but if it was ambiguous, it would be fine, and maybe that's the machloket, that according to Beit Shammai, I need to actively prove in each case that it's good for year six. Beit Hillel says, I don't need to do that, right? But at some point in the year, it gets to the point where it's clear what you're doing is, right, is for year seven. So maybe that's what it is. Okay, we could come up with different models. But now the Gemara just asked a very technical point, which is, v'lama lo tanita mikulei Beit Shammai u'mechumrei Beit Hillel. There's a list, right? We have a list. Because usually Beit Shammai is more machmir, but sometimes he is more mekel. And in Ediot, in Masechet Ediot, we have a list. These are all the times that Beit Shammai was lenient and Beit Hillel was machmir. And the Gemara says, well, why isn't this one of them? Why should it be? Because sometimes
the rain stops early.
Sometimes even after Shavuot, it's still going to be mutter according to Beit Shammai, because if after Shavuot it's still Yafeh Lepri from year six, then according to Beit Shammai it's going to be mutter to work the field. According to Beit Hillel, it's going to be forbidden, and therefore Beit Shammai would be more lenient. And what's the Gemara's answer? Right, we only in that list is only things where Beit Shammai is lenient from every single angle that you could look it at. But he says, Pa'amim she'enik shamim mitzuyin vein alacha mitzuya. He says, no, there's a very technical answer, which is whether, according, Beit Hillel has an arbitrary date. Beit Shammai gives you a standard, which is, as long as it's good for year six, then it's forbidden, and if not, and he says, it depends on the rain. Depending on the rain, some years, right, last year's crop is totally done and finished working, I don't know, Lag BaOmer. And in that case, Beit Shammai is more machmir, because Beit Hillel still gives you an extra 2 weeks, right? More or less. Sometimes, it's not true. Sometimes the way that the field is being worked, you still can benefit the fruit on Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, right? Oh no, he's still usually passing by Beit Hillel. It's just a list, just so you know. Right? The Mishnah and Ediot, there are two lists. In Ediot, there's the list of the kulot of Beit Shammai and the chumrot of Beit Hillel, and then there's other list, which is when do we paskin like Beit Shammai, right? Those don't necessarily overlap. Remember, some of the machloka Beit Hillel Beit Shammai have nothing to do with chumrah and kula. Sometimes it's just, it's not always asr mutter. It's like, yeah, right. That's not a kula or a chumrah, right? Exactly. Yeah, that's a good example. Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Which one is being more machmir or more mekel, whether you light 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1? The answer is neither, right? That's not a, by the end of the, I don't know how good your mathematics are, but I'm pretty sure you know that 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 plus 6 plus 7 plus 8 is the same as 8 plus 7 plus 6 plus 5 plus 4 plus 3 plus 2 plus 1. I hope that you can do that. Even if you can't figure out, even if you don't know what that number is. Oh, for God's sake, it's 36, man. 8 plus 1 is 9, and then each of the pairs in the middle, and there's 4 pairs. right? And if you didn't know that, you could also know that, because every time you buy a thing of Hanukkah candles, how many candles? No, there are 44. 36 plus 8 shamashim. It's always 44, right? So you could have just remembered that. But if you didn't remember that, for dam, for blood, because Hanukkah is in our... Okay. So, I hope you can do that gematria also, which is 40 plus 4.
It is fair to say that sometimes it's still going to be beneficial for the fruit, even though it's hurting the trees and vice versa. Sometimes
yes. Like, yes.
So where... I would think that it depends on the same things.
I don't know. Okay, but anyways, but that in the end of the day, the Rishalmi says this is a very technical point. If you want other things that are gematria of 44, one of the wonderful things about Bar-Ilan is that it has a gematria tool where I can put in a number and then it can tell me every phrase or pasuk in Kol HaDor Kula that comes to 44. So if you are so interested, I just put it in. There are 701 different things you can now play with if you want to come up with some, hey, you know what? Actually, this one isn't bad. It's also the gematria of Lahat, which is the fiery blade in Gan Eden. So here, there you go. Good. What a fart. Kobe, your job now is between now and Hanukkah, come up with a whole Dvar Torah based on the fact that we have 44 candles, if you include the Shamash, and it's the same word as Lahat, which is the fiery blade. What? Yeah, go ahead. Okay? It's also the same gematria as Yelid, Yulad, all the variations on, right? Yud, Lamed, Dalid. It's also of Hevi Hashem.
Listen,
wow. Hey, V Hashem. Okay, I wouldn't have done that. And Biado Uviad of Livavi, my heart. Oh my God, there's so many. So Uve Ohel Achi Yehi Vayavou Ache Utvoach Tevach. I mean, oh, what all the gematria gold you could come up with. This is the most, by the way, the most ridiculous feature in all of Bar-Ilan. It's like, it's also of Bad Bivad Yehiyeh. Wow. You could definitely do something with that. It's also, but on the other hand, it's also of Yehyeh Zova, right? The Zav, right? So, I don't know. So, like, you know, I don't know what gematria you want from me. Yeah. Also, by Yovel. Amazingly, by Yovel. Okay. And Yigael. So, and Eliav, Vayivku, and they cried. I don't know. I can send you all 701, and you can come up with some fancy schmancy. Yes, exactly. I challenge you. It sounds more like Purim Torah, but I still challenge you for Hanukkah. Okay, guys, that is the end of Halacha Aleph. Woo! Yeah, I'm thinking of that. We should, right? So the next few days, what we're going to do is, listen, we're going to try to go through the next Halachot. There's a lot in them, but we're just going to try to get a general idea, do basic lamdus. Get you used to reading Yerushalmi al Seder, so we'll see how far we get. We'll spend a few days on it, and then we'll move on to the next big topic, okay?